60. The food dwindled while they worked. It was a grim countdown, these disappearing cans and what had been rounded up from the farms. Not everyone in the silo participated. Many never came to the town hall. Many more simply wandered off, realizing they could grab more grow plots if they hurried. Several mechanics asked for permission to head back down to mechanical and round up those who had refused to make the climb, to try and convince them to come, to see if Walker could be stirred. Juliet was overjoyed with the prospect of gathering more people to go. She also felt the pressure mount as everyone worked. The server room became a massive workshop, something like you'd see down the halls of supply. Nearly 150 cleaning suits were laid out, all of them needing to be sized and adjusted. Juliet was sad to see that it was more than they needed, but also a little relieved. It would have been a problem the other way around. She had shown a dozen mechanics how the valves went together like she and Nelson had used to breathe in the suit lab. There weren't enough of the valves in IT, so porters were given samples and sent down to supply, where Juliet was sure there would be more of these parts otherwise useless for survival. Gaskets, heat tape, and seals were needed. They were also told to secure and haul up the welding kits in both supply and mechanical. She showed them the difference between the acetylene bottles and the oxygen, and said they wouldn't need the acetylene. Eric calculated the distance using the chart hanging on the wall and reckoned they could put a dozen people to a bottle. Juliet said to make it 10 to be safe. With 50 or so people working on the suits, the fallen servers acting as workbenches as they knelt or sat on the floor, she took a small group up to the cafeteria for what she knew would be a grim job. Just her father, Raff, Dawson, and two of the older porters who she figured had handled bodies before. On the way up, they stopped below the farms and went to the coroner's office past the pump rooms. Juliet found a supply of folded black bags and pulled out 5 dozen. From there, they climbed in silence. There was no airlock attached to Silo 17. Not anymore. The outer door remained cracked open from the fall of the silo decades before. Juliet remembered squeezing through that door twice before, her helmet getting stuck the first time. The only barriers between them and the outside air were the inner airlock door and the door to the sheriff's office, bare membranes between a dead world and a dying one. Juliet helped the others remove a tangle of chairs and tables from around the office door. There was a narrow path between them, where she had come and gone over a month ago, but they needed more room to work. She warned the others about the bodies inside, but they knew from collecting the bags what they were in for. A handful of flashlights converged on the door as Juliet prepared to open it. They all wore masks and rubber gloves at her father's insistence. Juliet wondered if they should have donned cleaning suits instead. The bodies inside were just as she remembered them, a tangle of gray and lifeless limbs. The stench of something both foul and metallic filled her mask, and Juliet had a memory of dumping fetid soup on herself to drown the outside air. This was the stench of death and something besides. They hauled the bodies out one by one and placed them in the funeral bags. It was grisly work, limp flesh, sloughed off bones like a slow roast. "The joints," Juliet cautioned, her voice hot and muffled by her mask. "Armpits and knees." The bodies held together barely and enough, the tendons and bone doing most of the work. Black zippers were pulled shut with relief. Coughing and gagging filled the air. Most of the bodies inside the sheriff's office had piled up by the door, as if they'd crawled over one another in an attempt to get back inside, back into the cafeteria. Other bodies were in a state of more serene rest. A man slouched over on the tattered remnants of a cot in the open holding cell, just the rusted frame, the mattress long gone. A woman lay in the corner with her arms crossed over her chest, as if sleeping. Juliet moved the last of the bodies with her father, and she saw how wide her father's eyes were, how they were fixed on her. She glanced over his shoulder as she shuffled backwards out of the sheriff's office, staring at the airlock door that awaited them all, its yellow skin flaking off in chips of paint.
"This isn't right," her father said,
his voice muffled and his mask bobbing up and down with the movement of his jaw. They tucked the body into an open bag and zipped it up.
"We'll give them a proper burial,"
she assured him, assuming he meant it wasn't right how the bodies were being handled, stacked like bags of dirty laundry. He removed his gloves and his mask, rested back on his heels, and wiped his brow with the back of his hand.
"No, it's these people, I thought you said this place was practically empty when you got here.
It was. Just Solo and the kids. These people have been dead a long time.
That's not possible, her father said. They're too well preserved.
His eyes drifted across the bags, wrinkles of concern or confusion in his brow.
I'd say they've been dead for 3 weeks, 4 or 5 at the most.
Dad, they were here when I arrived. I crawled over them. I asked Solo about them once, and he said he discovered them years ago.
That simply can't be.
It's probably because they weren't buried, or the gas outside kept the bugs away. It doesn't matter, does it?
It matters plenty when something isn't right like this. There's something not right about this entire silo, I'm telling you.
He stood and headed toward the stairwell, where Raff was ladling hauled water into scrounged cups and cans. Her father took one for himself and passed one to Juliet. He was lost in thought, she could tell.
Did you know Elise had a twin sister?
Her father asked. Juliet nodded. Hannah told me. Died in childbirth. The mother passed as well. They don't talk about it much, especially not with her.
And those two boys, Marcus and Miles, another set of twins. The eldest boy, Rickson, says he thought he had a brother, but his father wouldn't talk about it, and he never knew his mother to ask her.
Her father took a sip of water and peered into the can. Juliet tried to drown the metallic taste on her tongue while Dawson helped with one of the bags. Dawson coughed and looked as though he were about to gag. It's a lot of dying, Juliet agreed, worried where her father's thoughts were going. She thought of the brother she never knew. She looked for any sign on her father's face, any indication that this reminded him of his wife and lost son. But he was piecing together some other puzzle.
No, it's a lot of living. Don't you see? 3 sets of twins, and 6 births. And those kids are as fit as fiddles with no care. Your friend Jimmy doesn't have a hole in his teeth and can't remember the last time he was sick. None of them can. How do you explain that? How do you explain these bodies piled up like they fell over a few weeks ago?
Juliet caught herself staring at her arm. She gulped the last of her water, handed the tin to her father, and began rolling up her sleeve. Dad, do you remember me asking you about scars? About whether or not they go away? He nodded. A few of my scars have disappeared. She showed him the crook of her arm, as if he would know what was no longer there. I didn't believe Lucas when he told me, but I used to have a mark here, and another here, and you said it was a miracle I survived my burns, didn't you?
You received good attention straight away.
And Fitz didn't believe me when I told him about the dive I made to fix the pump. He said he'd worked flooded mine shafts and had seen men twice my size get sick from breathing air just 10 meters deep, much less 30 or 40. He says I would have died if I'd done what I did.
I don't know the first thing about mining,
her father said. Fitz does, and he thinks I should be dead. And you think these people should be rotted.
They should be bones, I'm telling you.
Juliet turned and gazed at the blank wall screen. She wondered if it was all a dream. This was what happened to the dying soul. It scrambled for some perch, some stairway to cling to, some way not to fall. She had cleaned and died on that hill outside her silo. She had never loved Lucas at all, never gotten to know him properly. This was a land of ghosts and fiction, events held together with all the vacant solidarity of dreams, all the nonsense of a drunken mind. She was long dead, and only just now realizing it.
Maybe something in the water, her father said.
Juliet turned away from the blank wall. She reached out to him, held his arms in her hands, then stepped closer. He wrapped his arms around her, and she wrapped hers around him. His stubble scratched her cheek, and she fought hard not to cry.
It's okay, her father said. It's okay.
She wasn't dead, but things weren't right. Not in the water, she said, though she'd swallowed her fair share in that silo. She released her father and watched the first of the bags head to the stairwell. Someone was rigging up spliced electrical cables for rope and running it over the rail to lower a body. Porters be damned, she saw. Even the porters were saying, porters be damned. Maybe it's in the air, she said. Maybe this is what happens when you don't gas a place. I don't know, but I think you're right that there's something wrong with this silo, and I think it's high time we get out of here. Her father took a last swig of water.
How long before we leave?
He asked.
And are you sure this is a good idea?
Juliet nodded. I'd rather we died out there trying than in here killing each other. And she realized she sounded like all those who had been sent to clean. all the dangerous dreamers and mad fools, those she had mocked and never understood. She sounded like a person who trusted a machine to work without peeking inside, without first tearing it completely apart.